How do you create, develop, and cultivate leadership in your organization? Imagine what can happen when you have mission-minded leaders and enthusiastic team members who believe they can build business as a force for good. Hi, everybody. My name is Jason Lipper, the CEO at LCI Industries, and I welcome you to this edition of Built to Lead podcast. We are delighted to share the real-life experiences of others who have courageously stepped into the power of creating a culture that feels like family, a culture where every team member has a deep sense of purpose. Take what you hear today and be inspired to build a culture of caring, giving, and leading in your organization. Amazing things happen when you place people at the core of what you do every day. Welcome to this edition of Built to Lead.
Hello, I'm Edgar Cabello with the Built to Lead podcast, and I'm here with Courtney Armstrong today. Courtney is a friend of Lippert's, a full-time RVer who has a very cool story that we're going to dive into here in just a little bit. But Courtney, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so glad you came. And so you're also known as the Flippy Nomad, but it also means some other stuff too. Tell us a little bit about Flippy Nomad.
Correct. Yeah. So the Flipping Nomad, technically it's my business, but the business developed out of a social media following. So my Instagram handle was the Flipping Nomad just because I thought the name was funny. And like I was personally the Flipping Nomad, but social grew it to be a full-fledged business.
I noticed as I was looking around, I just on Instagram, you're probably elsewhere also. Where else can people find you?
No, so actually it is mostly just Instagram.
Okay.
I'm kind of starting to, you know, go into TikTok a little bit. It's kind of a little bit of a different animal, but kind of until now, Instagram has fed the business more than what we could even keep up with. So we hadn't really ventured into other platforms.
Okay. Well, I saw a big number there, like 80,000 plus.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. So you got a lot of people that are paying attention to what you're doing.
Yeah, we are. And kind of accidentally, didn't really intend for a following, but it's happened. And it's delivered me some really cool opportunities.
So what's so intriguing that people are like, all right, hit that follow button and you got 80,000 of them like on your trail.
Yeah. So, I mean, at the core of the Flipping Nomad, the name The Flipping Nomad comes from flipping RVs, you know, much like people flip houses. And so how it got started was how the business got started was I was buying RVs, renovating them, and then selling them. And so I was literally flipping RVs. Now, current day business, we do more like working with units that clients already own. So they can bring us whatever unit they own, we'll do a custom upfit to it. And then they get a custom, you know, rig that feels like a house on the inside.
When I was looking around your website, I was like, okay, I think I could stay there for a little bit. Like, it looks like a high-end living room is what I saw.
Yeah, a lot of people tell us that the RVs, our finished RVs, are better and fancier than the houses that they live in. And sometimes even the RVs are bigger than their first apartments. So they're, if you didn't know you were looking at an RV, some of them are units when they're finished, you can't really tell they're an RV.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I saw that's part of the business too, right? So you're flipping them, you're selling them. And I saw on your website that there were some that were up there.
Correct. So when the business first was getting started, we were buying them, renovating them, and then selling them. Yeah. But as I was working, you know, 80 hours a week in the shop and just drowning in the amount of work that they were taking, I started analyzing what is taking up the majority of my time here and where can I streamline. And I honed in on it being more efficient for us to work with RVs that our clients already own, because when we buy a unit, if it has cracked tires, I have to take care of it. Mm-hmm. You know, if it has bad tanks, I have to take care of it. If it needs to be resealed, I have to take care of it. So it was creating all of this extra additional fluff.
Okay. Yep.
And so by working with RVs that our clients already own, you know, we do look at them and make sure that they're solid and structural and whatnot. But we can hone in and just, you know, hone in our craft on the interior design and construction part.
Yep. Yeah. Got it. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's very cool. So I love the concept. So flipping houses, flipping RVs, mm-hmm. Who knew? I didn't.
Yeah.
And so that's a brand new concept to me. And I've talked to a few other nomads like yourself here in the last weeks, and it's just really awesome. Like there's more people out there doing what you do than a lot of us realize.
Yeah, there is. I did my first renovation on my own 7 years ago, and then 2 years went by and I thought maybe there's a business here. Like maybe other people don't like these RVs either. But at that time, when I started the business 5 years ago, there was nobody on Instagram doing it, nobody on YouTube, nobody on TikTok. So I really had this head heart conversation with myself, like feeling like there could be people out there that wanted something custom, but then really wondering why nobody else was doing it. And it was this, I'm not kidding you, it was like a circle in my head that I'm like, yes, there's got to be people that want it, but then why isn't anybody else doing it? And so it really took a lot of courage and bravery that I had to build up to start the business, thinking I'm not going to have any customers.
Sure.
Well, now 5 years later, through the power of social media, it's a totally different story.
Of course.
You know, everybody on Instagram seems like they're doing some sort of customization to their rig, which I love because they're able to share their personalities and do really unique things that mass, you know, the manufacturers of the world just physically cannot do. You know, for example, we had a client two rigs ago where they wanted dog crates in their dining benches. You know, that's probably not something a manufacturer would do. So yeah, it, maybe if I can toot my own horn a little bit, I was kind of one of the pioneers to renovating RVs, but it's been really cool to watch the niche go from literally crickets and nobody doing anything to now so many people customizing their RVs.
That's fantastic. I mean, a lot of people are owning RVs these days, of course. So it sounds like, you know, there were, who knows if other people were doing it, but you started telling the story, right?
Yeah.
You got it out there.
Yeah, told it on a platform.
Yep. Yeah. Awesome. I love that. So, but can we just kind of turn back the clock just a little bit? So you've done a whole bunch of stuff and we'll get to what you just did like within the last couple of days up here in Elkhart County, because I like that too, because that's also part of the evolution, it sounds like to me. But let's go back to the beginning of this thing. So how does somebody, a young lady like yourself, like end up hitting the road and doing what you're doing and living a life that most of us maybe would struggle to relate to a bit?
Yeah. So I have a very different story of how I got into RVing. You know, most people have the story of where it feels like something out of a movie where they sold everything and they bought their dream RV and they hit the road and drive off into the sunset. You know, it's this like magical freeing experience for them. And my experience was the exact opposite of that. At the time, it was 8 years ago now, my dad had a stroke and he had two businesses, but neither business was doing very well. So there was hardly any money left over to pay me. And so I was living in the only housing situation that I could afford, which was a bedroom in a 4-bedroom house with three friends. And our lease was coming up for renewal, so we all sat down and talked about what we were going to do. And I discovered that they had all made plans that did not involve me. So one of them went off and got a 1-bedroom apartment by himself, and then the other two went off and got a 3-bedroom house with somebody else and basically just left me hanging. And so I had 2 weeks to scramble to find somewhere to live. And, you know, because I was making next to no money, I could not afford a 1-bedroom apartment. You know, there was no way I was going to buy a house. Yeah, you know, I didn't know anybody that needed a roommate. And so I thought about living in my car, but then I thought, well, I've got the office of my dad's building. I could at least like live in the spare bed or the spare office there. And there's a bathroom. I could probably rig up some type of a shower. And so I actually did sleep at the office for 3 nights just because I didn't want to be in that house with them, because I was so like heartsick over what was going on. And then I reached out to a family friend named Ron, and Ron's the kind of guy that just knows everybody in town. And so I thought maybe he would know of somebody that needed or that had a mother-in-law suite that was vacant or needed a roommate or something. And as fate would have it, he managed the KOA campground in our hometown. And so when I told him what was going on and I asked if he knew of anything, he said, well, there's a fifth wheel in the KOA that's available, and the owner will finance it, so you don't have to worry about getting cleared through a bank. And then there's a position coming open at the front desk where you can work in exchange for everything. So like your site rent, your electricity, propane, the whole nine yards. So he said, your only housing expense will be the payment on the fifth wheel. He said, are you interested? And I was like, not really, because, you know, I'm like 25 years old, recent college grad, you know, and here all my friends are buying houses and living, you know, that newly graduated life. And I'm having to choose between, do I feed myself or do I feed my dog? And now I have to go live in an RV in a quote trailer park, you know, was the mentality that I had at that. But it was really my only option. And so I bought it and moved in. So I went from having never looked at an RV before, never thought about living tiny, to buying that fifth wheel and moving in 3 days later. And it was my rock bottom. I was so embarrassed about it. I felt borderline homeless. Like I tried to keep it hidden from people. But I moved in April And then that summer came along and literally like the only entertainment I could afford was taking my dog on a walk. So her and I would just like walk the RV park every night. And so I got to know the other full-timers that were there. They were there on a stationary basis. You know, they were not traveling. And they were all their own type of quirky, you know, like there's so many personalities in this lifestyle that I realize now. And so I was like, okay, I really kind of like these neighbors. They're fun. But I was like, I still don't like this for myself. You know, it's cool for them, but I don't know that I like this. Well, some more time went by and I was like, okay, I'm kind of easing into this now. You know, I was like, maybe I had made a snap decision about it. And I thought if I keep living this way, because it was affordable, like I could probably get my feet under me faster and get my family's feet under all of us faster if I continue to live this way. And so 1 year went by of living in that first one. And I thought I would like to keep living this way, but I want one that feels like a cute bachelorette pad, you know, because I'm 26 now and I want something that feels like home, mm-hmm. that doesn't feel like an RV. Mm-hmm. And so I went searching for one that I thought was going to be cute and bachelorette pad, and I searched high and low. I was on every website that was out there, and I was shocked at what some of the interiors were because I did not get the luxury of shopping for my very first RV. So I didn't know what normal RVs looked like. Sure. And as fate would have it, that very first one was a Keystone, and it had white cabinets from the factory. It was a 2006, and Keystone only attempted white cabinets on one brand for 3 years, and that was it. Well, as fate would have it, I accidentally got one of those. And so when I went to go look at, you know, RV number two, I couldn't believe the browns and the like terrible floral prints that were out there. And so I finally found one that had the floor plan that I wanted, but it was just terribly ugly on the inside. And I thought, well, I could paint, right? Like, I don't know, can you paint an RV? And I did a quick Google search. Nothing came up. And so bought that RV and brought it home and did a cosmetic gut job on it and built my own first little, you know, bachelorette tiny house in there. And it came out really cute and fell in love with the lifestyle over the next 2 years and loved living tiny, loved being a minimalist and loved being at the RV park. And then that's kind of, so then I was 3 years into living in an RV just stationary. And then that's when I was gaining the courage to start the business.
Okay.
And so I kind of got everything settled with my family, with my dad, with the family finances, all of that. I grew and sold one of his businesses and then closed the other one. And so I was like, okay, now it's my turn for life. Like, what am I going to do now? And so I was like, well, I'm already like in the thick of RVs and I've got this idea for a business here. So I've got nothing to lose. You know, let's try it.
You know, what got my attention here as you're talking is just the idea of, again, another connection I've never made is the idea about living tiny. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a hot thing. I mean, I'm actually quite intrigued by it. I look for tiny homes, not that I want to live in one, but I'm really intrigued by it. And they're beautiful. And what people are doing with small spaces is unbelievable. I just left out the wheels, I guess. And mm-hmm. So that connection too, to me is just like, gosh, you just really did. You got on, it's kind of similar direction, just a different trail to get to where you needed to end up. So I think that's, anyways, light bulb moment for me.
Yeah, well, good. Yeah, because there's so much more when you look at, as far as I see RVing as a whole, you know, there is the traditional RVing of mm-hmm. people traveling and what have you, but then there's also the minimalist yeah. movement and the tiny movement, and it's so freeing to get rid of your stuff okay. of life, you know? And so there's a lot of people that are wanting to live tiny but doing it by way of RV. They're not traveling, they yeah. don't own a truck, very much like I got into it. And we have several clients that have done it that way.
Okay. Yeah. Great. I love it. And I the reason I do is because I'm seeing and hearing a lifestyle choice that people seem to be making along the way, tied to minimalism, tied to like just kind of offloading some of the life stuff that maybe mm-hmm. that you're choosing to say goodbye to.
Yeah, very much so. The way that I explain it to people, you know, until you've really lived tiny, it's kind of hard to fully yeah. wrap your head around what it's like. But the way that I explain it to people is each item that you have, you know, I'm looking at a notebook here and, you know, bookcases full of books, or, you know, all that stuff that's in the garage, whatever it is, all of those items carry an emotional weight with it. And you don't realize that you're carrying that weight until you start getting rid of it. And then you start feeling a lot lighter emotionally. And you're like, wow, this is really awesome. And then you're like, I don't need any of this. And then, sometimes you can go like the opposite direction and just purge and purge and purge. But you don't realize that like emotional subconscious weight that you're carrying with all of that stuff.
So there's a therapeutic piece to this for you as well.
Very much is.
Because, your dad was struggling.
Yep.
And you had some struggles of your own. And something about kind of getting in an RV and saying goodbye to some things was good for you.
It was. And then also coming home to just my own space, I felt safe. If I can get like really deep here, it kind of felt like coming back to the womb almost, where it was small, it was safe. I knew I would be okay. Like it was my safe haven.
Right.
Okay.
Wow.
Like I said, there's a lot that goes into this
story. It sounds like it. I appreciate you telling the story because, I think a lot of us might kind of just default to the idea that, you get in an RV or you rent an RV and you take the family to the mountains or, you do this because it's, we got to try it at least, once or twice in our lifetime or whatever. But the life choice about it is what I'm hearing. And then as you're willing to go deeper into that, it sounds like it was kind of life changing for you. And I think maybe that's part of the message too. This is another way to do it. And I think that's what we're discovering along the way. So I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah. And then there's even kind of a third element to it too, which is how I first got into it, which was affordable housing because I was at that time I was making next to no money, but if you kind of fast forward to current day, so many people are getting pushed out of affordable housing options where, they're not homeless by any means. They can afford some type of housing, but housing prices are just skyrocketing and they're through the roof. And so a stationary RV is about the only thing they can afford.
Yeah.
So I see a lot of that too with my students.
We were talking to our friends, the Rossies, about that idea. Like that was one of their areas of passion, is they wanted people to know that this is actually an economical way to live your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so for pulling people away from that feeling stuck in some other lifestyle. And I really appreciated that. Again, another eye-opening moment for me.
This episode of Lippert Built to Lead podcast is brought to you by the Lippert Academy for Leadership, the team committed to enhancing your organization's leadership and cultural goals with strategic leadership development programs, on-site training, executive coaching, speaking engagement, and customized solutions. Find out how to get your organization involved at www.lci1.com/academy. Or send us a message at academy@lci1.com. That's academy@lci1.com.
Somewhere along the way, so there's an entrepreneurial story here as well. You drummed up the courage, you jumped in, you started your thing. So you were kind of the flipping nomad turned into flipping nomad the business, flipping houses, flipping RVs. What was all of that like?
Yeah. So I've always kind of had an entrepreneurial side to me. In high school, I split my day between two different high schools so I could get the business curriculum because my home high school didn't have it. The other high school in town did. And so I've always kind of been this business nerd always since day one. And so that was kind of already part of me as I got into RVing, and I think I would have had my own business no matter what, but I saw such an opportunity in the RV niche that it just made sense to continue with that too. And I'm also kind of a little bit of a gypsy soul too. Whenever I would need like a mental breather, I would jump in my car and drive up to this mountain town and just zone out on the road. So I think there were kind of two predispositions there that made me fall in love with RVing even more. But so once I got everything taken care of with my dad, then, like I said, it was time for me. And so I decided to make the brave leap of buying an RV, renovating it with the intentions of selling it. And so I did that. It sold locally. And then I built another one, bought one, renovated it, the interior, and it sold locally.
Okay, so when you say renovate, like what are you doing? Like what are you doing with your hands?
So I even... Today, still currently, my hands on the tools build the RV. So installing flooring, painting, caulking, any carpentry that has to happen in there, building fireplaces, furniture, cabinetry, countertops, sinks, faucets. Wow. Yeah, me and my mom. My mom's okay. a partner in the business. And she's here in town right now. She's not feeling well, though, so she's in her rig. But yeah, so she kind of coming out of that period with my dad. My parents ended up getting divorced. It was a long time coming. And so my mom was looking to reinvent herself as well. And so I had this budding RV business going. She was excited about it. And so she joined the business as well.
Wow.
So we're kind of a mother-daughter team okay. in this.
A little family business mm-hmm. going on.
Yep. So back to the business of, or the story of how the business was growing. So I built and sold two RVs locally. But then as people were coming to look at them, I recognized that the buyers were only interested in their interiors and they weren't looking at the structures. So like the roof could have been totally rotten and full of mold. You know, the tires could have been on their last leg. It could have had cracked tanks and, you know, who knows what in there. And the people were too wrapped up in the backsplash and the throw pillows to care. Mm. And I was like, okay, time out. We're in a position to trick people because I could go buy whatever moldy rig and put some paint on it and sell it. And these people wouldn't know. They're right. too excited about these interiors. So I said, we need to work with rigs that have good bones and that are built right. So who's building them right? So I did a lot of research and Montana kept coming up time and time again amongst other brands. But mm-hmm. Montana's, I mean, there's over 100,000 of them that have been built. You can find them pretty easily. And so I said, okay, we'll just make Montana our brand of choice. And so for the third RV that I built for the business, purposely bought a Montana. And then about that same time, my Instagram account was growing. And it freaked me out a little bit when it was first growing because I was like, these people are strangers. I don't know who they are. This is weird. But a follower was loving what we were doing and loved this new Montana that we had bought. And she reached out and she was like, hey, do you think I could pre-purchase it from you and walk through the design process with you? And I was like, well, we've never done this before. I don't know how it's going to go, but if you're willing to make it up with us, then yes, we'll do it. And she was like, yeah, let's do it. And so that was in 2018, early 2018. And since then, every single rig that we have had like pre-sells.
So you're kind of a mobile interior designer at the same time.
Kind right? of. Yeah. Yeah.
Contractor, designer.
A little bit of everything. Yeah. Wow. And so when people look at the business of the Flipping Nomad, it's really easy for people to think that it's an interior design business okay. and that that's my background.
Got it.
And that's really actually not the yeah. case. I've really kind of had to learn interior design because it's such a big piece of what the interiors are, but that's not, I don't feel like it's my strongest suit.
Okay. What is?
I don't know. That's a good question. I've never been asked that before. Probably coming up with ridiculous ideas that I have to then go build and figure out how to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got it. I'm coming up with a good branding yes. like framework is also
yeah.
in the neighborhood. So.
Yes. I really need that like carpenter that can just follow me around the country where I can come up with these like ridiculous ideas and then they can go build it.
we definitely want to get to like how you're spending your time these days because there is kind of this evolving thing that's happening with your business. But I don't know. I mean, I'm hearing a number of different things along the way, you know, from the entrepreneurial thing to, you know, if the on the deeper end of things, it's just like, you know, there's a healing aspect to mm-hmm. it for you. You know, not only did you build a business that nobody seemed to be familiar with, but you turned it into a family business for your mom, who was also probably also going through a healing type mm-hmm. of a thing on the back end of a marriage and such. So, I mean, and I'm not even picking up everything that you just put down, you know, but So like the economical aspect of it. Now you're trying to teach people that there are some other ways to live their life mm-hmm. that are within reach. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that I'm just hearing as you're talking right now. And I think it's just super cool.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah
there is a lot that goes into it. And when the business was first growing and the Instagram account was first growing, I kept my story hidden because I was still kind of embarrassed about it. But then I realized that it had such healing power for other people. Mm-hmm. And I've lost track of the number of messages that I've gotten from followers saying, hey, you know, my husband lost his job. We're losing our house. We're moving into the RV. We're so embarrassed about it, but I feel okay because I know that you and other people have gone through it too. Or, you know, I'm getting divorced and, you know, I have to move into the RV and you know, a lot of those stories. So it's really cool for me to be able to pay it forward and help them through their struggles.
That's
too.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I kind of tiny living part. Anyways, go ahead. I just threw that in there.
Well, I was going to say, and I kind of feel like the universe has rewarded me in a sense, because I've gotten some really cool opportunities out of it too. And I don't know how, you know, we can get really deep on this conversation here, but you know, how much of it is a karma payback in a good way, because I've had some really unique opportunities. One of them being through the decision of working with Montana. You know, like I was saying, we made Montana our brand of choice, and I was posting about Montana quite a bit on Instagram. I had no intentions of catching Montana's attention or Keystone. Keystone builds the Montana. Never would have thought they would have even known I was alive. Well, they found out what I was doing, and they watched online for several months, and then they reached out in 2019, and they were like, hey, this is really cool what you're doing. We would love to work with you. And I was like, oh my God, are you kidding? Like, Keystone knows I'm alive. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And so they flew me out to their factory, and they were like, what do you think if we pull a brand new Montana off the line, give it to you, and tell you to go build the craziest thing you can come up with? And I was like, done.
Yeah.
We're in. Yeah. We're in. Like, I didn't. Deal. Yeah, I didn't know anything else at that point. Basically committed, like, right there on the spot. Yeah.
But if I can just bookmark that for just a second, like, I still want to go back to the question that I asked you that nobody's ever asked you, and that is, so what is your strong suit? And I think what you did, just from a business angle, is you identified a good product, and and then you rode that horse, so to speak. You know what I mean? You saw that forward, and then that kind of opened up some opportunity for you. So I think you're pretty opportunistic from what I can tell. And I'm not trying to be your therapist right now, but like, but if you're struggling with knowing what you're strong at, I guess I'm hearing some things that you're probably pretty good at right now. And folks noticed it and wanted to pull you in a little bit closer. So cheers to you on that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's, I would say, yeah, I think I can recognize an opportunity. And one of my favorite books that I've ever read is called Blue Ocean Strategy. Okay. It's the story mostly about the gentleman that started Cirque du Soleil, you know, which is the acrobatics mostly in Vegas. And he, at that time, anyways, you should read the book, but he, circuses were a big thing, but it was hard. It was getting diluted, and it was hard moving the animals around. And so he came up with a totally different thing where he merged two different segments that were completely unrelated to be in, you know, one thing together. And he had phenomenal success with it. So I think I can see those merging two pieces together type
thing. I can
see
that. Blue Ocean Strategy.
Blue Ocean Strategy.
I like it. Very good. Current state. The business is changing now. Tell us about that evolution and kind of where you see this thing going.
Yeah. So like I mentioned, Keystone brought us in. We built the Ultimate Montana, which is an insane over-the-top fifth wheel. And then we had a lot of industry partners involved with that, Lippert being one.
Can you tell us a little bit about the insaneness of this thing? Like just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Yeah. So what was so fun about the project is the only thing that Keystone asked for was the wow factor. They said, we want you to push it so hard that people might not like it. Like they could appreciate it, but might not want it as their own. And so I was like, all right, game on. So it's the thing that catches the most attention when you first see it is it's predominantly black on the exterior with some gold accents. And that's the same as the interior too. So it has a black kitchen, gold accents. And then some of the features that are on it are just ridiculous and over the top. Outside it has in the storage bay, a full bar. So it has a custom kegerator and a margarita machine with three blenders and a wine chiller that holds six bottles and a TV. And this is just the front storage bay. And it has a TV that lifts up.
I mean,
up.
I'm already in. Now, like, I'm in.
Yeah. So. And then in the back of it, we turn one of the storage bays into this huge outdoor sound system.
Oh, geez.
And then inside, it has two ultrasonic water vapor fireplaces. So it creates steam that's illuminated by light bulbs and it looks like real flame. And it has an 80-inch projector screen TV. And it has a freestanding clawfoot bathtub, to name a few. And it's fully outfitted with solar too. So it'll run both air conditioners off the grid.
Is the bathtub close to the margarita machine?
But that's a good idea.
That's a good idea, I'd say. So,
that is a good idea.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty awesome.
And some of our stuff is in there too.
Yep.
All right, just want to be clear about that. So
yeah, you guys were a big supporter of it.
Love it. Let's talk about what's going on now and again, like what the days ahead.
Yeah. So in between when we debuted the Ultimate Montana, which was December of 2019, the plan was to be on display for all of 2020. Timing is everything.
Yeah.
We got 2 months in and then had to kind of shut her down because of COVID. And then our waiting list. So we basically just stayed in park. Like we really didn't travel much. We had a shop in Texas. But then the demand just kept growing and growing and growing. And it was to the point where just no matter how hard we worked, we couldn't keep up. Like we would get one unit done and there'd be 250 more people on the waiting list. And then we'd get the next unit done and there'd be 300 more people on the waiting list, you know, so now we're at 549 units that we can't even get to type thing. And so I was like, this is just not working. We're trying to put a square peg in a round hole here, you know? And so we really, so I was faced with the decision of, do we ramp up the team and the construction team, or do we go Blue Ocean strategy on this and try to go a different, try to come up with something unique? Well, we were in outside of the Austin, Texas area, which is in a huge housing boom. And so to find skilled labor there is next to impossible. So the realities of trying to build a team was going to be difficult. And then even if we could 3X the, so we were only building one unit at a time. So I said, even if we could 3X the output on this, we're still not going to make a dent, but the energy that it's going to take to get to that 3X output is going to be a lot because we have to have a shop that's three times the size. We have to have an arsenal of tools that's three times the size. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's still, we're still not making a dent. Mm-hmm. So that's when Blue Ocean Strategy idea came in, where let's just teach people how to do this on their own. So we spent 4 months last summer building a course online, teaching people from hitch to bumper, the whole overhaul of what they can do to their RVs. Because you can't really take a residential construction approach to RVs because they are built differently. You know, you only have a 2-inch sidewall. Do not use a 3-inch screw.
Right.
You know, so there's a lot of idiosyncrasies like that. And weight's a big issue too. Not so much with motorized, but in the towables, which is our sweet spot, weight's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, for example, plank flooring is super thick and you can annihilate your carrying capacity just on plank flooring, mm-hmm. and planks don't ride well, you know? And so there's issues there. So anyways, that's why we were like, okay, let's just focus on teaching people how to do their own. And we had a revenue goal in mind for the first launch. And now the course has tripled what we thought it was going to do.
Brilliant.
So that's when we were like, all right, get rid of the shop. We're done. We're done doing this.
Just brilliant.
Yeah. Thank
you.
Way
to go.
Thank you. Yeah. And so
you figured out how to scale the business, basically.
Basically. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, it was hard too, because there was part of me that was like, we are a construction company at our core, and mm-hmm. you're going to tell me we're not going to have a shop. You know, there was a part of me that was, you know, the logical realist side of me was like, this doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But then I was like, yes, it does make sense. It does make sense. We can go do stuff and things that has not been done before.
That's right.
So that's what we're doing.
Way to go.
So we're teaching people how to not only how to renovate their own RVs, but also my Instagram following also recognizes that I'm a big RV nerd. You know, I've lived in one full time for 8 years. And so I know tanks and structures and seals and boondocking and solar and towing and weights and backing. I actually just got done teaching a driving school. So there's so much more that goes into it than just renovating too, and so we're teaching basics too.
Do you know Seth Godin? Do you know of Seth Godin?
I do.
I can hear, I don't know if you're into that, but like I can hear some of the strategic pieces in play here. Anyways, might help you in the days to come, because I think what you've done is you've scaled with differently now, right? So it's not you hands on.
Correct.
It's you outthinking the challenges.
Yes.
And getting ahead of it. And I really do. I think that's absolutely brilliant. So, I mean, the innovation that's also built into this would be another strength, in my opinion. So,
thank you.
So, you know, in this space, I love that we're having this conversation right now, because, I mean, we have this conversation at Lippert all the time. What does it look like for us to innovate our product line? What does it look like for us to innovate, honestly, our team member ranks? Like, how can we build leadership in a manufacturing setting that other people don't do? We're really paying a lot of attention to innovation right now. What can we do new product-wise that's maybe a little bit outside of our normal industry? So what you're saying is really hitting home, and I see a lot of connecting pieces here. Listen, we got to wrap up. I could talk to you for a really long time because there's a lot in there, I can tell. I mean, what do you say to people that are kind of exploring the possibilities of, all right, what do we do next? Like, what's some of the big stuff like for you that's been important that you've taken away from your experience up until this point?
I think what I could say is I have had some of the best experiences and opportunities come out of committing and then figuring it out. Like, especially with Keystone, I basically like committed right there on the spot. And then we started figuring out like, okay, how are we actually going to get this rig done? And I don't know maybe if it's overzealous, you know, committing that way. And I don't know that other people would give that same type of advice. But for me, like, it has afforded me some really cool opportunities to just commit and then figure it out.
Yeah. Okay. Not everybody's built like that.
Yeah.
but you've done a nice job going with that. So, hey, thank you for taking the time today. You've taught us a ton.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. And best of luck to you and mom as you guys, you know, stay on the road and do your thing and continue to innovate and teach others how to do the very thing that you've found a lot of joy in. So really happy for you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Courtney Armstrong is our guest today. So I'm Edgar Cabello again with the Built to Lead podcast. If there's anything that we can do for you to help in terms of your cultural transformation in your workplace and with the team members that you value so much, please let us know. Reach out to us at academy@lci1.com. That's academy@lci1.com. Again, I'm with Courtney Armstrong, who has just taught us a ton today. So thanks once again, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's Built to Lead episode. If you have a story to share or are interested in learning how you can be a business as a force for good, please visit us at www.lci1.com/academy. And please follow Lippert on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok, and Twitter. Thank you.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast belong solely to the speaker and do not necessarily reflect the view or mission of Lippert Components Incorporated.